Welcome back to Biff, a podcast about superhero TV shows, movies, and throwing the frisbee around. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my co-hosts. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
Don't flirt with my sister.
Never. I would never do that. I'd never do that to you. Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
Hi, Sarah. That is a rare circumstance where we both had the exact same joke, but it worked out so perfectly.
I should have done the other direction, clearly.
Yeah. High five, man.
Because that's what actually happened, right? I think he said, don't flirt with my sister, and then he goes, hi, Sarah.
That is such an auspicious start.
I just want
to
be clear to everyone out there that we don't plan for this ahead of time. I mean, we do some work ahead of time, but
That's obvious.
Not necessarily as a team. We're not that good. We're professionals.
don't like each other that much.
Coworkers.
We know the same guy. We're friends with the same guy.
We're a couple of guys.
Dan and I are friends with the same guy.
That's true. I can live with that.
Zing. Name jokes. Oh, this went downhill real quick.
All right. We are here to discuss Falcon and the Winter Soldier episode 5, entitled Truth. And on recap duty this week, very light, quick recap, Mr. Guy English.
Man, I hate it when you set me up for failure.
You're welcome.
So we open with Roid Rage Cap running through the rain into a warehouse. He starts flashing back and talking to Lamar as he collapses to his knees holding his shield. The shield. He eventually steals himself and says, let's go to work, which was Lamar's catchphrase, and he stands. He's then confronted by Sam and Bucky, and Sam tries to talk him down, but when they ask for the shield back, Walker goes haywire. We get a fight, and just a tip to Walker, don't hide in places with plenty of airspace when you know Sam is coming for you. maybe a low ceiling would have worked better.
Just like sit in a car.
Something, anything where he can't use his one thing that he's really great at. Eventually, they manage to wrestle the shield off him by breaking his arm and knock him down with a crazy flying slam move. Bucky picks up the shield and drops it next to Sam, and it's still all covered in blood. Cut to Torres shows up to let Sam know that the government is taking over, and Sam and Bucky are out. Sam tells him to take these broken wings and
learn to fly.
Yeah, I knew Maltz would laugh at that. I wasn't so sure about you, Dan. He would give me a polite laugh. We cut to Walker in front of a committee who strip him of his title, his commission, and his benefits. Walker screams at them that he is what they made him, and he says, with conviction, I am Captain America. Checkers. While he's in the hall talking to his wife, Elaine shows up and introduces herself as Val. Somebody fill in the full name, because
Contessa Valentina Allegra de Fontaine.
Oh yeah, there we go.
There you go. I wasn't going to write that down. Val pumps up his ego, says she knows he took the serum and lost the shield. She tells him to pick up the phone when she calls. Very mysterious, like. Carly and the Flag Smashers find their haunt shut down, and she vows to go on the offensive. We find Zemo at the Sokovian Monument, and Bucky walks up. Zemo tells Bucky he's going to have to kill Carly because she's too far gone. Bucky does a shoot him in the face pantomime for some reasons I guess we'll discuss. The Dora and Milaje show up to take Zemo off to the raft, another thing that we'll probably talk about. And Bucky asks AO for one last favor. Cut to Baltimore. And Sam visits Isaiah Bradley again to bring him the shield. Bradley reveals his full backstory, which involves being lied to about what he was injected into them, him and his squad. When a couple of his squad mates were captured, he overhears the brass talking about bombing the POW camp to hide the evidence of super soldiers. Bradley left the compound one night and brought them all back, mirroring what Steve did. Upon return, though, they throw him in jail and experimented on him for 30 years, trying to figure out why the formula worked on him. Eventually, a nurse took pity on him, declared him dead, and he's been under the radar since then. He refuses the shield, telling Sam that no self-respecting black man would want to be Captain America. Again, Carl Lumley, ace, yeah. Like real huge move. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. that, all of his performances are just so great. Yeah. They kind of form the backbone of the show at this point. Maybe not the backbone, but they are. We'll talk about them after. Back at home, Sam and his sister reconnect. Sam asks for help, and Sam asks for help from the community, and they come through, giving them all of the aid they need to fix their boat. Bucky shows up to flex a bit by lifting heavy stuff and drop off a case from the Wakandans. And we start a whole new show where two buddies fix a boat. Dan, I've literally my notes here. Dan, Dash, take it away.
Sam and Bucky fix a boat, aka this old boat.
I love it. This old boat is so perfect. it's so great. Sam insists Bucky stays over for the night, but forbids him from flirting with his sister. We cut to Walker at Lamar's parents' place, where he lies and tells him that the guy he killed was the guy that killed Lamar. Lamar's sister, I get the sense that she sees right through him.
Yeah, she doesn't like him.
Say a word. No, she's right. Like, I think the parents want to believe that. This is an aside, but I think the parents want to believe that Lamar picked a good friend.
Yeah.
And she's like, this guy is no good. I've seen guys like this, right. And they ain't no good. Meanwhile, Sharon is on the phone with Batroc, and we discovered that she'd hired him to attack in the very first episode, and she wants him for another job, and that she freed him from the Algerian jail. Some of that, you need to understand what he's yelling at her in French. So it's, if you can understand what he's saying, it's clear that's what she hired him for, rather than just being something that you
right.
mm-hmm. sort of guess the association with. Back to this old boat. Sarah kicks him out for working in the morning on the machine that they don't understand, and they head off to practice frisbee. They have a great conversation about the legacy of the shield. Bucky apologizes for not understanding what it means to hand a black man the shield. And then Bucky explains his feelings about the shield, about it being part of the family, and Sam giving it up made him feel that he lost his last connection to anything. Sam counsels him to make amends rather than to avenge. And one of my favorite lines of the show, you've got to go to them. Sorry, I didn't write it down right. You've got to go to them and be of service, which is by Captain America. Just Sam, but I'm calling him Captain. you see what I did there? Uh-huh. I promoted him, and he was holding the shield at the time. And the kids keep calling him Uncle Cap or Uncle Sam.
Uncle Sam, yeah.
Uncle Sam.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Sarah and Sam decide to keep the boat because it's part of their history. We get a really good conversation about history and what it means. And we sort of get the sense that, by the end of this conversation, Sam is galvanized. And we get montage. And Sam runs around and throws a shield. And it's a pretty great montage, I got to say.
Yeah.
Like he's working like mad, which is weird because he's probably already awesome. But he's like, okay, I got to be more awesome now. Which I don't know if there's a next level to that, but cool. I love the way he learns to throw the shield. I love the way they have that shot of him throwing the shield off the dock against like a post, and you're like, ooh, if you screw that up,
mm-hmm.
that's gonna suck. Going
for a swim.
Yeah, a swim with it. Like, I don't know, did metal detectors work underwater?
I think the thing is magnetic too, because Crossbones threw like a magnetic bomb at it, so you might be able to use a big magnet to get it.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we figured this out. If John and I ever throw that shield
a couple times, too. I mean, if we figured out a thing that didn't happen in the show.
Yeah. It's dangerous. You gotta be careful how you throw that thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's a metaphor there, too. I think, like, the first time he throws it, it's coming right back at his head. I feel like the shield was coming at him at a velocity that he was uncomfortable with mm-hmm. initially.
Yeah.
And has learned to accept over the course of the show. I don't want to get too... I don't want to just, like, montage too much, but I think it's... There's stuff there, you know? I think that little montage tells Sam's arc a little bit. In New York City, Carly is visited by a truck who drops off what looks like grenades. We don't really see. It's clearly weapons and bad things. And he says he's not there for the revolution, but only to kill the Falcon. I don't know why he's so butthurt about that, but okay. Torres tracks down the flag smashers to New York City and lets Sam know, and Sam says he'll take it from there. The GRC are meeting in the war room from Strangelove, and they are not good people. They're, yeah. Some of them are just like, first of all, it's 20 million people, which is a humanitarian disaster on a scale that's pretty unimaginable, and you can't just move, whatever. It's, I don't want to get into the logistics of dealing with 20 million people, but, and neither do these guys. They're like, can we just not do that and just use the army? Anyway, not good people. But a flag special plant says one world, one people to a compatriot, and the lights go off, and then red, and the tech goes all haywire. We see security people rush to take some of these jackasses out of the room. Then we cut to Sam opening the case that the Wakandans gave him. Mid-credit roll, Walker is building his own shield and fusing his medals of honor into it. Scene.
End scene.
There's, I guess you can just do that. You can just build your own shield.
There's no law against it, right?
I think that's going to be a janky-ass shield. That shield is going to be
spare
as janky.
You got lying around in your garage.
Yeah, it looks exactly like that. Yeah.
But that shield's gonna... I'd be interested to see what it ends up looking like. I mean, I got to imagine it's going to look moderately polished, but maybe he'll come out with like a real janky look that makes him look even crazier.
I kind of feel like when you weld your metals to it, it has like a super like homemade look.
Maybe. Who knows? Maybe he'll paint it different. I don't know. No, it seemed like it was painted. Like,
yeah, he was painting it the same.
Yeah, sometimes in the comic, like I think U.S. Agent inverts the color scheme. Like it's a blue or a black around the outside.
Yeah. There's usually, there's often a black line, I think, right?
Yeah. Anyway. Okay, want to wrap this up? One up real quick. Let's just rate it and move on. Well... I mean, let's start at the top, I guess.
The fight.
Well, I was kind of surprised to see Red Rage Cap running away. Like, I think
was
that's
he running?
Weird
I'm not sure
to...
if he was running away, if he was just running to try and find more of the flag smashers. I didn't get. I mean, it didn't really seem definitive either way, really.
That's true. It was an odd cut because he's standing there triumphantly in the last shot. And then we see him running and looking kind of panicked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I read too much into that. Yeah. So that would make sense. If he's running to find more slag flashers? slag flashers is a British term for something you don't want to know about.
Don't Google that.
Yeah. Flag smashers. That makes sense why he would duck into the warehouse, I guess.
Yeah.
Seems like a likely hiding place.
They'd love warehouses.
That's... It's a natural habitat.
I don't know if that's just like a standard thing, or if they did a lot of filming in warehouses because of COVID or what.
I think you need that. Like I was sort of alluding to, Sam needs to fly and do stuff, right?
True. Right.
And if you put him in a Daredevil / Arrow corridor fight.
And he holds his own pretty well against, a guy who's
he does
janked up. I mean, he doesn't, he wouldn't come out on top on his own probably, but he is able to use that flight suit to such great effect that it almost levels the playing field.
Oh yeah, for sure. And there's some cases where you think he's kind of got the upper hand even a little bit. And
even when he tears the wings off, he's able to use it to like basically break his arm.
Yeah, he's still got the thrust. Like he's still got more pull to him, or whatever, or push in that case when he slams him. Than normal. So that's kind of cool. I loved he ripped a move off of Spidey, which I loved, where he runs at him and then flies up in the air and uses his grappling hook to try to grab the shield and go over him and take it off, and like it doesn't work, and they end up in that crazy tug of war. Yeah. Which I love because it's basically his thruster versus Cap, which is, anti-Cap. I don't know. I don't want to.
Yeah, whatever his name.
Walker. And I just kind of love that. It's a little almost reminiscent of Cap trying to hold back that helicopter. Like, real Cap. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, this is an engine that's built entirely to lift a whole bunch of weight. And it's my arm, like my bicep. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Pretty brutal fight. Did it remind you a little of the Winter Soldier? Like the
I guess so. I mean, the music uses a lot of cues from... I mean, it's the same guy. It's Henry Jackman, but he employs a lot of that sort of. Well, I guess a lot of that's from Civil War, though. Too. That sad. It's like, isn't this fight sad song?
Yeah. Well, it's also it's a 2-on-1 fight.
Like, nobody's really coming out perfectly in this necessarily because it's so disappointing that they have to have this fight.
Yes. Yeah. I really love the way that. Sam tried to talk him down.
Yeah.
Like, look, you know, something went wrong.
Right.
You know, given your history, your background, whatever it is, they'll I don't know if he says take mercy, but they'll take that into account.
Yeah.
Which ultimately they do.
Sort of. They're pretty, I feel like they come down on him a little hard. Stripping him of his, you know, I feel like the easier thing to do might have been to let him keep his military record intact. He's not Captain America anymore. That didn't work out. You're still a captain. I mean, you know, you're getting discharged. But, I mean, if the guy had a, I don't know. I mean, I guess the point is simply that it was so public that they couldn't do that. And so they had to make an example of him.
Here's the thing. I kind of want you to reevaluate that with respect to
my point is partly though that they honorably discharge many people who have done worse things.
Yes. Yeah. So in that way, that's kind of where I was going. A, people that have done worse things. B, right. Like the what the heck were they called? Blackwater. People got pardons just now. Like, I kind of would, like, he got off more harsh than they put on police officers. So in that way, I'm kind of glad that that happened. I know we're getting into pretty dark part of this conversation, but ultimately we're talking about the repercussions from killing somebody in cold blood in front of a crowd, which is, in front of a bunch of cell phones too, which is, I think, not an accident that that's here, right?
Yeah. I think what I meant was more just in terms of like being realistic rather than.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, right. I think that they make that committee look better than. Most real committees look, despite that guy on the committee just being a jackass. Like, it's,
I don't quite understand that guy's job. He's a senator, apparently, but he is.
Is he?
Yeah, Walker addresses him as senator several times. Okay. And then when he shows up at the end, in the GRC meeting.
You had
meeting,
told me he was the head of defense, the secretary of defense.
No, we guessed that.
I think we assumed that, yes. But at the end, he's addressed as senator, too, when he's at the GRC meeting. So I guess he's a senator, but he's never named, which feels a little sloppy. Like, just give him a name, even if we're going to forget it. Because
head of the Armed Services Committee.
He's head of everything, apparently.
Well,
why
you know
is he
what?
The same
also,
guy that you send
name,
to your?
His name is Senator.
Yes,
also,
Mr. Senator.
Yeah. Post blip, I'm willing to believe that you know stuff got redistributed in a little bit of a way.
It just seemed convenient that he was also the guy who was then at the GRC meeting, like negotiating. Moving refugees around because I don't again that seems like not his job but fine whatever economy of characters I understand you need to you don't want to spend the time building up multiple different political characters we get it he's the establishment
government jerk
he's the man
So Dan while you were making a cup of tea we discussed the fight at the beginning anything that stuck out to you is awesome or bad
No, I think it's pretty well choreographed. I was impressed that, like, you know, he basically is going to try the same thing on Sam that he did to Nico, right? He's about to, like, decapitate him at one point with the shield. It's like, that's my go-to move now. Like, that's what I do. All I do is decapitate people with shields.
For other than decapitating
people? Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, if you didn't learn that from Captain America, what did you learn?
Well, so one thing that stuck out to me was that it's sort of like the end of Civil War, where Cap, and I think it was on the Mothership, on The Incomparable, talking about this at some point. Tony goes to protect his face because he thinks Cap is going to stick him in the face. And Cap, he's not. Steve is not going to decapitate you. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter how mad he is. And that's what gives Steve access to the arc reactor, basically. And this his killing move is that move, except this is a guy that goes for the head. Like, he will go for the face. Right. And it's so brutal. Like, and that look in his eye, like, you know he wants to cut his head off with that thing, which is, it's no good.
I guess I didn't really take it that he had done that to Nico. I thought he had just, like, pounded his chest or something.
With Nico, I think he just pounded his chest. But, I mean,
yeah, okay.
Sam has armor and stuff, and I don't know, just the way he was, I really got the sense he was going to
take his head off.
Yeah, well, he was definitely going to kill him. Like,
well, yeah, exactly.
And
if you've decided
you're going to kill him,
it doesn't really make a difference.
Well, it's also more decisive, and he's feeling pretty decisive, I think. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
I was going to say the things that I noted. One is Walker's "Why are you making me do this?" which he says a couple times, which feels very in keeping with that character, but also. Yep. Also very indicative of the damage this guy has, right? Where, like, he is not taking responsibility, right? That is not something Cap would ever say. No, Cap would never say.
It's the antithesis.
You know,
Cap takes responsibility.
Exactly. Yeah.
Madcap does not.
And yeah, exactly. So I think that's very telling.
Madcap. I can't believe I just came up with that one. I've been riffing this whole show. Yeah.
And then the other thing was, of course, we could have been a team, which, you know, again, is disingenuous at best, but, you know, is sort of called back later in the episode where Bucky and Sam say they're not a team. They are a team, but they say they're not.
Yeah. Right.
And Bucky's somewhat passive aggressive, leaving Sam the shield.
Bucky.
Yeah, he seems a little still, like, pissed off or something like that. But he obviously comes around later.
Yeah, so no, that's fine. That's fine. I think we can start there.
I think Bucky. Well, that shield's covered in blood and bad stuff happened, and he's blaming Sam at that point. And he's like, "This always should have been yours." Like, he knows it's not his.
Right.
Like, just get rid of this, you know. And then there is, like, somewhere off screen, Bucky has a revelation, right? Because when he comes back to him, suddenly he's kind of woke and like, neither Steve or I knew what it meant to hand the shield to a black guy. I don't know how he discovered that, because he was not a fly on the wall in that conversation with Isaiah. And yet, I guess he's gone away and done more thinking. Like, I guess that the traumatic events that just happened, he goes away, maybe he calls up his therapist, which would be healthy for him. And then, you know, sort of thinks about his own feelings and then how to express them, because he clearly comes back a sort of a changed person, right? Like,
his experience with Zemo too, I think, plays a part in that, right? Like, I think that whole scene is interesting, and I know some people have questions about the mock execution thing. I think my best rationale for it is him proving to himself that he is no longer a killer. That he was never even going to be tempted to do it. Like, that's why there's no bullets in the gun at all, right? It's not like, just like, I hadn't loaded it.
But it's also a great rebuttal to Zemo's thing of, like, you're going to have to kill
him. The only way to end this.
You and I are killers. Yeah. We know this is a thing. Sam, he's saying, like, Sam's too good to do this. We know the way the world works. You're going to have to do this. And he says, we'll do it our own way. Zemo says, you were going to say that, and then he sticks a gun in his face and basically proves that I'm not that way anymore, to himself. Right, and
killing
to Zemo,
is not required
to himself, exactly. And to Zemo, and then he takes away the door.
But I like that scene a lot, because there is the mutual respect between them too, right? Like, Zemo gives him the nod when he realizes, like, okay, you're gonna kill me now.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah, that figures. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with it.
Yeah. Well, in fact, one of the lines that I think underscores that, probably literally, almost literally, is he says, "I took the liberty of scratching my name out of your notebook."
Yes.
Like, he mm-hmm. knew. Mm-hmm. He knew, no matter, like, he had his notebook once in the plane while they were on their way to Madripoor, I believe. And that really implies, it's like, look, I know wherever way this is going to go, you're going to kill me. Or... This is the end for us. And he accepts kind of that death. Like, maybe that's why he escaped to go see the monument.
Yeah, the memorial, because it was the last thing he was going to do.
Yeah, yeah. If I'm going to get killed, I'm going to be here, and it's going to be on my terms. And he is a man of remarkable conviction. He's crazy and insane and wrong, but there's conviction to him, which makes him interesting.
Do you guys saw the D&D meme with him?
No.
It's Zemo saying, but if you can cast Speak with Dead and speak with plants, you should be able to talk to furniture. And it then cuts to Sam saying, he's out of line, but he's right.
I did see that.
Which made me laugh very hard.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that last thing. I think that's, I don't know about you guys, I assume that's certainly the last Zemo we'll see in this show, and I think maybe that's just the end of that character.
Well, no, to end the character means killing him somehow. But, like, and also,
yeah,
they're taking him to the
specifically the raft,
right?
They're taking him off the board,
which I thought was a little weird. Like, I didn't think that they would.
They're putting people in the raft because that is the deck of cards that they can pull people out of more easily than.
Right, it doesn't necessarily make sense for the Wakandans, because why would the Wakandans do that?
Yeah, but, right. That's my point. Like, you'd think the Wakandans would want to take care of stuff themselves.
They decided maybe the international sort of, you know, community, as it were, would need to speak on that. But yeah, it's a little weird. It's a little for convenience, so you can just have him off the board, but you can pull him back if you need to.
Yeah.
I think it will be the reason I say I think that's the last time we see him overall is I just feel, part of me feels like that's a good conclusion to his story.
Yes.
And I don't think dragging him out again would make him seem more like a maniacal villain as opposed to this really interesting portrayal that we got in these three episodes.
Yeah. There's a bunch of conspiracy stuff about whatever. There's a bunch of
Thunderbolts.
Yeah, Thunderbolts and a bunch of other stuff where he's leading a bunch of teams of anti-heroes. And I don't know. Maybe I don't particularly find that cool.
I think that robbed some of the portrayal here, honestly.
I think
they did such a nice job with him that I kind of am good to leave him off the board for a while, if not permanently.
I completely agree. Yeah. And I kind of like the way he goes out with dignity.
I think his last line is ladies, like to the
Dormilaje.
Yeah,
it is.
Which is a bold choice, but he pulls it off. Yeah, anyway, so, I mean, I think Daniel Brühl did a fantastic job in the few episodes that they gave him, you know, honestly, he really was a scene stealer, and I think it's good to remove him from the board now, because there is so much else going on.
There's so much to do in the next episode.
I do want to talk about, I think we need to talk about Isaiah, because I think this may take a while.
Oh, yeah,
I
definitely.
Think this is a big chunk of this episode is... Yeah.
I also just want to say
his reaction.
Yeah, we are remarkably ill-equipped to do justice to the scene. I just want to say that up front.
Yeah.
So let's, yeah.
And I feel like I saw a lot of confusion about this scene relating to Sam's decisions. And I will say the thing that struck to me that the point that this was sort of bringing home, and I think this is an important point for not just non-black people, but like people who are not from a certain community, which is those communities or identities are not monolithic, right? Like not all black people have the same opinion about this in the same way that not all Jewish people have the same opinion, or not all Chinese people have the same opinion about something, right? There's going to be various takes on it within a community. And I think that's the point they're trying to get across here is Isaiah, as Sam says later, he has been through some terrible stuff, and there is no like surprise whatsoever that those experiences would color his point of view into the decision that he feels now, where he's like, I don't care about the stars and stripes, right? Like, there will never be a black Captain America. Everything they tried to do was awful. And you know, everything he says is true. It's just the conclusion that he draws from it is different because of the experiences he's lived than the conclusion that Sam is drawing from it with his experiences.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's my high level evaluation of that.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think that's absolutely right. I mean, because I did see some people who were saying, like, what is this show trying to say? Because, you know, we get this message that, you shouldn't, you know, like almost being Captain America as a black person is submitting yourself to a state that hates you, which is, you know, not an invalid opinion to have. But then Sam makes another choice, and that's because that's Sam's choice. That's not Isaiah's choice. That's not it, and it's Sam has a different experience than Isaiah too, and it's slightly more, it's not as harsh.
He says as much to Bucky later. In fact, he encourages Bucky to not worry what Steve would have thought, because it doesn't matter. Stop looking to other people to tell you how to be you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of the takeaway, because he has that incredibly moving conversation with Isaiah Bradley. But then he goes and talks to his sister, who has a different opinion. And, Sam is ultimately his own person, and he's a synthesis of all of his own experiences. And I think it's, we see these scenes in order. We see Isaiah, then we see him visit Sarah and reconnect with who he is there and the community helping him and all of that. And then when he deals with Bucky, he's like leveled up in terms of superhero-ness, I feel. You know, he was always a superhero, and now he's a super dupey hero. Like, he's Captain America level hero. Like, the way he manages to talk to Bucky and walk him through his problems and explain to him how to be more comfortable with him.
Yeah.
What does this scene mean? I mean, it's awful. And I'm really glad that they're glam and clads, maybe not the right word. It's appropriate and worthwhile that they are they're telling this story and being righteously angry and furious about it. I don't think Sam's ultimate decision, I mean, we don't know what's in that box. Maybe he doesn't want to be Cap and he just hangs a shield on the wall and they throw darts at it. Who knows? I doubt that's going to happen.
It's a vibranium top hat. He's going to
be that's it. Yeah, exactly. But ultimately, I think these two sequences juxtaposed, I never get that word, sort of underscore the conflict that Sam has. And then hanging out with Bucky a bit more and helping him through who he is. I don't think any one of these is a deciding factor. It's not like you go, these aren't NPCs and you go pick up a side quest and then you go tell them one way or the other depending on what they say, right? He's a character that's learning and evolving and he's got his own back experiences and he's understanding Isaiah's side and Sarah's hopes.
And I will add to that,
him.
I think the other part of it that's important is Isaiah makes the point that, like, they erased his past and they, you know, that's something obviously that's not new and they've been doing it to, you know, black Americans basically forever. And it's contrasted with him fixing the boat and talking about holding on to the past they have. So again, different approaches. Sam is, you know, and he, I think his ultimate point, as he says, is like, what's the point of all the suffering and the pain if I don't keep fighting? Like,
he says,
where
for
is
our,
it going
he says for our people, and you're not sure he's talking about his family, although I get the sense it's something he's going bigger there, right?
Yeah, I think
I completely agree with you, Dan. There's that point about history, her history has been erased for 500 years, and then we find him on the dock with a paintbrush about to erase his own history.
Right.
Like, this is not...
If anything, a little too on the nose, perhaps, but it gets done.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. I think it works great. I think it's...
Yeah. No, it's
poetic.
Nice. And, it's very nice.
Yeah, and that conversation is... I mean, they could have easily just done a show where he gives up the shield and then changes his mind. You know, I mean, they could have had a much lighter touch than this.
Yeah. Like, oh, and I'm not physically ready.
I mean, they could have done that. Yeah. And then Walker comes in and screws it up and he's like, well, I guess it has to be me, You know, right. I mean, but right. they could have done something like that. And the fact that they had this conversation, which is so important and so very well handled,
I think there's
really
also
makes it for me.
There's also is worth considering. I know it's way back in episode one at this point, like almost the beginning of the show, but I want to throw into the mix his conversation with Rhodey too at the very beginning.
Yes.
You know, again, just to add another diverse viewpoint to it, right? Because like Rhodey is someone who clearly has a background that's much similar to Sam's, at least in terms of like how their right. military service and stuff played out. Mm-hmm. And I think he is also, he doesn't push Sam one way or the other, right? He is, his approach is more interrogative in terms of like, right. why do you feel that way, Sam? Yeah. And I think that that's nice because again, it's rare in a show where you get to have this many, you know, characters, big important characters, from a certain, you know, community have mm-hmm. these diverse number of viewpoints. Right.
Right.
I think,
right.
I think a lot of audiences, especially white audiences, are used to being like, there's one token black character who is going to yeah. espouse the views of all people of that color. Right. Yeah. And you're like, right. that's not yeah. how it works.
Yeah. yeah. In fact,
and the two of them, and Rhodey and Sam have both been, you know, they I think they like each other. I think they could probably consider each other friends, but they have had their disagreements in the past.
Sure.
And yeah. Rhodey is clearly someone who is much more into serving and following orders, it
right.
seems like.
Yeah. I mean, the way he takes Tony.
In general.
Yeah, in general. But, I mean, yeah. ultimately, Rhodey shows up. Don Cheadle. I mean, all of these actors are amazing. Everybody.
Yes.
Don Cheadle shows up, and that integrative?
Interrogative.
That interrogative. Thank you. Words, man. What do they mean? launches the story. That's the crux of the matter, right? Like mm-hmm. he shows up and he's like, here's the question that this show is gonna make you our main character.
Oh, what if the question was in this show?
I'd be like, that's weird, but probably better than the one we would have got. but no, that he presents the essential sort of conflict that Sam needs to resolve by the end of the show. Mm-hmm. And then we see two other black characters sort of guide him through that. One in a representing the angry earned. I don't want to say angry. That's the righteously
frustrated.
He's right to be. He's frustrated. Right to be angry.
He's right to be angry. Yes.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got a lot to be angry about.
He's got the righteous truth of things that have been done to him on his side, and he's rightly burdened by them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Sarah shares some of that just through shared experiences of the community and all of that.
Yeah.
And yet ultimately decides not to erase their family history. And I think, you know, these help guide Sam through his journey, more than punching anybody in the face. And I think Carly in a way serves that serves that journey too, right? Like when he tries to talk her down and he tries to sort of understand where they're coming from. That's why I think, you know, right. one of his great superhero scenes was when he, you know, he walked in there, maybe could have got killed. I mean, he's going up without a suit against a super soldier. And he's just like, hey, I just, can we talk about this? And he's leaning up against a table and he's calling her on her BS. And he's really sort of prompting her to go through her own.
Walker screws it up.
Yeah, because, you know, white guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I got some questions thinking forward, both in the end of the series and in terms of like future development of some of these characters. So theories. First of all, this is a difficult question. I'm not sure how to phrase this. Do we think that Sam will take up literally the name Captain America by the end of the show?
I think so, but I'm not completely wedded to that.
Yeah. It's
I don't
maybe
think he needs to necessarily.
Yeah, exactly.
But
well, I mean, yeah, I kind of am on the 50-50 of it there. Like, and I don't know. I honestly don't know how they want to spin that. like, or how they want to talk about it, because, you know, he has an identity also as the Falcon, although in this episode, you know, he is kind of relinquishing that.
To Torres. It seems fairly obvious to me that Torres is going to show up. I mean, I don't know.
I fixed your suit
for something, but
yeah,
I think he's going to fly in at the end.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and that character is a version of the Falcon in the comics, so that would be a hat tip. And I kind of half expect that. I agree, because he literally is like, you know, do you want these back? And he's like, nah, keep them. You know, like,
right.
What am I going to do with them?
I think Sam's going to show up.
Yeah,
as Sam. And somebody else is going to call him Cap.
I think that's a good call, actually.
Yeah, I think that's
pretty good.
Steph's going to go down, and somebody's going to say, hey, Cap, like, as a heads up or, like, something. And he's going to end up responding. And, like, maybe not that. Like, it's a little ham-handed and goofy. I don't think he's going to show up on the scene, land his jetpack, and dust off his shield and say, hi, I'm Captain America. I don't think that's probably not going to happen.
I mean, that's exactly what Walker did.
He's going to say it to the camera.
Exactly. That's exactly what Walker did. And screw that guy.
No one likes that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, Wyatt Russell, incredible job. Like, the range that we've got that guy, really, really great job. I hope nobody's mad at him because he's killing it.
So. No.
Well,
no,
sometimes he's literally killing it. Yeah. But,
I was trying to look up
not doing phrasing anymore.
Yeah.
Does Sam have a rank? He was in the Air Force, right? Is he legitimately a captain? I was trying to figure out if he was
ever.
I don't think they've ever said at least in the MCU, certainly.
I don't think they've ever shown him in uniform.
No, they haven't, because he was out by the time.
They describe him as a U.S. Air Force pararescue man, but I don't think they ever confirm what his rank is.
I just say it's captain.
It doesn't really matter. It's totally academic, but I was just curious.
I kind of want him to be the equivalent of like a sergeant. I don't know what
an NCO, basically.
Like the highest level NCO. You know, like a...
Oh, like I'm, a, I'm, like a master
I'm about
sergeant
to say Miles O'Brien, but you know what I mean?
Like, well, he's a... Yeah, this is getting down to the weeds, but he's a warrant officer. It's a little bit...
There you go.
He's a chief. Yeah.
Yeah, like the... Yeah, whatever. Like, it's the kind of NCO that they can give a lieutenant crap, and it's like, okay, well, I'm going to listen to you.
Right.
It's like, you take the lieutenant aside, and you're like, look, I've been here for 30 years, and you're right out of West Point, so here's where you're screwing up, and like, you know.
It's also the specialist side, where it's like, you know, like, a lot of your SEALs, for example, are like, like, chief petty officers or master chief petty officers, etc., like that, because it's, you know, it's a different progression. Anyways, that was just one question, and which encompassed the second bit about Torres, which I think was also on my mind in terms of whether he suits up as the Falcon before the end of the show. Again, possible. Also, a lot has to happen next week, so I don't know if they have time for all of these things.
I don't want anybody else showing up. Everything. I think we're kind of done.
But I will. The other sort of wild card I had in there as well is the Contessa.
Mm-hmm.
Who we should talk about a little bit, who is a character from with a decent amount of comics lore behind them. Described them, we paused and my wife wanted to know who she was. I was like, I feel like the best way to describe her is she's sort of a foil to Fury, like in a lot of the comics. They're a love interest, but there's also some competition, and at various times she's S.H.I.E.L.D. or Hydra or a spy or like independent, I think, all of those things at various points.
Yeah. Sorry, love interest, whatever. They were lovers. Love interest makes her more of an object, which I don't want to imply. But the lovers, as James Bond takes his hot for somebody, and they often have conflicting goals, or, you know, there's some kind of weird mix up in there. At one point, she was Madame Hydra, but she was also, there's comics where she worked with Agent 13, Sharon Carter.
Yep.
Her code name at one point was Agent 14. So funny that we got both of those.
lived right next door.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't really talked about Sharon either.
Right. And I somewhat want to link those two together too, because I was wondering. Yeah. So, is the Contessa move immediately to the forefront as the possibility of being the power broker?
I think that's a slam dunk, but I suspect we're not. I don't know. I don't think. Really pretty confident Sharon isn't the power broker, but certainly.
Well, she's doing a lot of weird stuff, though. I mean, she's sending Batroc after Sam now.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And to
me,
this reads like so nefarious that it has to be a fake, a head fake of some kind.
Well, yeah, I know. I said Skrull last week. And in the comic book, she is mind controlled at some point, but I doubt that they would bring that in.
I don't think
that's
they would
too
go
much.
There.
We've got one episode. We're not going to do mind control. Come on.
No.
That's not
happen. My guess is she was.
But my point is, I think there's another. There are several.
Somebody
there are other options for what's
I'm sticking with my theory, which is that she is, you know, essentially been sent by some agency to infiltrate the Power Brokers organization, is my guess. Like, she's still working for the good guys nominally, but she is you know, operating as though she is gone rogue.
Yeah, and honestly, we've seen S.H.I.E.L.D. use Batroc before.
Right.
Somebody hired him. I don't know, maybe he got Sharon Carter to do it. Yeah, well, Fury did, but I mean, maybe he's like delegated, who knows. Clearly he's an agent that does bad things, and it's not I can't recall from that conversation that Batroc and Sharon have if he tells her, I just want to go kill the Falcon, because that could just be an objective that she's unaware of, you know.
True.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But he shows up and he's like, look, I'm not here for your little revolution. I just want to go kill the Falcon.
But she said something that you'll get your chance.
Oh, maybe.
Or no, maybe
that was Carly. That was Carly.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So that's different.
It also makes me scratch my head. Again, I didn't want to think about it too much in episode one because I felt like it was just like, oh, Batroc, he's going to be the foil that keeps popping up and always trying to kill like Sam. Yeah. But he has, like, his plan in episode one is super weird. He's going to kidnap a military officer,
a specific guy. It doesn't make sense.
They don't really go into why.
And here's the thing, so I would love to know why in the next episode, and I do not think they will explain that. I think that's going to be a J.J. Abrams like, guess what,
we just needed him, we needed a guy for him to kidnap that you needed, that Sam was going to rescue. That was it. We needed
if he had been a doctor or somebody that we could have either tied to what may have been some kind of like vaccine requirement thing, or something that may have been tied to the super soldier serum thing, that would have been different. It would have felt of a piece. But like, let's kidnap some random lieutenant from a plane in flight. I kind of want to know why that guy is that important, and why you can't just, you know, walk up to his house and, you know, kick him in the face with your crazy Batroc kicks. Like, it's
because he's Batroc. That's why
he's got to go a wingsuit on it. Yeah.
And I think that links in too to the other sort of the Flag Smashers, who I think we could all agree, if there is an element in this show that has been mistreated is not quite the right word, but like
not fully fleshed out.
Clumsy is the Flag Smashers. Like, how do we feel about their plan, their like end game here, as it were?
They keep doing heel turns more than Schrodinger's Canary did on Arrow. Like, like a little not so much on the nose, but I mean, it's like, okay, kind of get where you're coming from. Even Sam gets where they're coming from, and then you're blowing people up. Weird. And now you're sieging the GRC, except they seem like dicks, so maybe that's good. But you want to kill Falcon, that seems weird. And you're working with Batroc with bombs. It doesn't jive. Maybe it's Carly going back and forth, because I'm gonna forget the poor guy's name. He's doing a great job. Long haired Australian guy.
Yeah, Dolvich, I think they credit him as in the
Dolvich
seems to be like, I'm here for the cause and I'm pretty into the cause, but I'm not here for hurting people that much, like more than is absolutely necessary.
He looks uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's real uncomfortable. I mean, he's literally like, oh, we're working with criminals now in front of Batroc, which is like, you know, when you're saying stuff to people's face, it's like, I really don't care.
And Carly revels in it a little bit by comparison, right? She's like, haven't you heard? We are criminals, right? Like, and she looks a little gleeful about this. And again, I agree with you. Like, it seems unclear to me exactly when her motivations. I mean, I can see why, you know, Walker killing Nico in that brutal fashion would send her down the path of, we need to escalate things.
But she escalated it.
Exactly. It's replaying a beat that we've already seen. And that to me, it didn't sell it quite as well. And also this plan seems like you're attacking the people who are voting on this thing, right? Like,
yeah, that does make it go away.
They'll hold another vote. I mean,
yeah, I honestly don't know what to tell you, but attacking government officials about to vote on something does not make the vote actually go away. I can't think of a parallel in real life, but I'm telling you, it was a foolhardy plan to begin with, and you're fools to do that.
Wow, man, they keep accidentally ripping stuff from the headlines, like clearly before it happens.
I wonder if they moved the show because of that
I don't know. That was
that's
so on the nose.
No, I guess they had already determined that it was going to
be already. I don't know. I don't know where the Flag Smasher plot is going. I feel confident that Sam will not kill Sam and Bucky won't kill Carly, but. Yeah. What do you do with, there's still at least six super soldiers, I think, by my count.
That's what the raft's there for.
Yeah, I guess. Do you ship them all off there? Can you rehabilitate them, or are they just too far gone?
Has anyone ever removed the super soldier powers? I mean, it seems like...
I don't think we've ever seen it.
Yeah, wait, doesn't Black Panther get... Black Panther depowers himself, which I know is a different thing. I suspect... That they're going to tie these together.
I don't think they even have that herb anymore, do they?
No, they got all. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm sure they'll find something. Again.
Wait, no. Didn't Lupita, whose name I'm going to forget in the show, didn't she save one?
She saved one and then they gave it to T'Challa.
Okay, well, I don't know. Take a seed. Who knows? Whatever. If they want more, they'll make more. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But I suspect that Super Soldier stuff and Wakandan stuff is going to dovetail a little bit more than just the vibranium and the shield. Those two are very similar. Take this and you get superpowered, or take this weird crazy juice and get zapped by Zeta beams, which seem to have been removed from the equation.
Well, they had the guy Nagel talked about refining it so it didn't require that.
Yeah, that would have really helped Bruce. Really would have helped Bruce Banner with his.
Someone should have let him know.
Maybe gamma rays work just as well. No, turns out not quite so much.
All right, so we have one episode left. We should go through and do a ritual really quick, and then we got like 2 minutes to talk about a couple other things that I know were on our agenda. So let's do a ritual. John, lead us off here.
It's a definite biff. I mean, it's a top secret level 4 biff. Yeah. I don't know what else to say. It's great. I mean, the scene with Isaiah Bradley is fantastic, and also this just it's fun seeing Bucky and Sam fixing the boat and stuff like that. And
I love that Bucky at one point does the he's doing his knife tricks with the scraper he's using.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, the initial fight is well choreographed and well done. I mean, it's a lot, and it happens early on, and so you can get past that and get into the stuff that's actually, I think, more enjoyable and a better watch in a lot of ways. I don't know. I'm eager to see the last installment, but also a little, kind of wish there were a couple more episodes.
Guy, what about you?
It's a biff. It's a Carl Lumley, because he showed up. I think they managed to pick an actor who does such a remarkable job of conveying I'm struggling for words, like a righteous fury about his history. And I think, given how few minutes are dedicated to that over the course of the show, putting it in the hands of such a capable actor, I think was essential, and they nailed it. I don't think you can watch this show and not have those two scenes seared into your head. You're going to forget some of the fight scenes ish.
Right.
You know, oh God, there was that thing on the pickup trucks, whatever. They weren't even pickup trucks. See, I've already forgotten. But you're not going to forget those two. Those two are going to land. One of the things I really, really liked about this, which I think John just said, is that they took it down three notches. This is the longest episode by far, and they luxuriated in it. They didn't, if they wanted to cut this down to 42 minutes, not a problem. But they spent the time with Sam and Bucky fixing stuff on the boat. Sam and Sarah hanging out, learning from each other. Sam and Bucky throwing the shield around, talking to each other, talking about their feelings. So often in these shows, the penultimate episode, the Darkness on the Edge of Town episode, sets you up for like, oh my god, massive cliffhanger, what the heck's going to happen? And this one took the time to sort of let Sam find who he was and then open that case with the promise that we're going to learn who he's chosen to be and how he's going to be. I think that's great. I really, really enjoyed this episode. Like, I think probably the best of the series for me so far.
Yeah, I agree with you, both of you. I think after, you know, some squishiness in that episode three, like four and five, I think both brought the goods for the most part. Not to say, again, there are still some rough edges. We've talked about them. And I like John, I think, you know, I like that they front loaded the fight. I felt like that was really nice because it let it have some action in it and drew you in. But it also ended up being like, let's resolve this thing that happened immediately. Yeah. And then move on to the stuff that's interesting before we get to sort of the climax. You give us a chance to slow things down. It's a bit like that scene in, not to say that this is the best of the MCU movies, but it reminded me a bit of the scene in Ultron where they go to Clint's house in the farm. Yeah. And it's like we are licking our wounds a little bit and kind of, you know, regrouping and having some interactions before we sort of go into what's going to be a big fight at the end, probably. Right. I'm not sure where next week goes. I agree also that, like, as the longest of the episodes, I kind of wish all of them had been this long. I feel like they could have benefited from an extra 5-6 minutes, each of them, and it would have made a big difference in some of the storytelling choices. But, you know, they did what they did, and that's their decision to make. Yeah, I give this one a biff. I thought it was really solid all around. And, you know, particularly as a guy said, Carl Lumley's performance, excellent. My only quibble is I feel like his old age makeup at times, and it's a little too close. It's like maybe it's just because I know what Carl Lumley looks like, and I'm like, it's a little not quite right. All right. Well, that's our ritual. We've got 5 minutes at the end here. One thing I did want to mention in sort of a really abbreviated superhero sweep segment was the Shang-Chi trailer, which dropped today as we record this.
Yeah.
Which looked interesting. This kickoff, I think, Black Widow is sort of the kickoff of Phase 4, but since it's a, you know, something that happened in the past, it's not really relevant. Mm-hmm. This is the real kickoff of like the next big Marvel phase, and I thought it looked very different from a lot of the stuff we've seen so far. Much more influenced by like kung fu movies and stuff, which is great. Mm-hmm. There's like, I swear, there's a scene in the trailer with like wire work being done, and I thought that's awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's got a.
No, it looked really good.
Yeah. It's got a. Like a 90s Hong Kong vibe era stuff going on, like a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sort of feel to it at times. It's a lot more. I said this to you guys privately. I should have. I thought it was going to be like a pumped up Iron Fist, and it is not. It is. It's something else. Like they it looks like they made a legit awesome kung fu movie.
Yeah,
which is cool, and I don't know why I thought they wouldn't do that, but man, it really works for me. It's a character I know next to nothing about.
Same,
but I'm all for it.
I don't know a lot, but I've definitely seen him and stuff.
Oh yeah,
no, yeah. And we haven't seen much of. There's not much of the characterization that comes across in the trailer. Like it's a teaser, right? So there's a lot of action. Yeah. There's a lot of cool shots and everything, but we don't get a lot of dialogue or a lot of sort of. We don't get much from the main character like at all. Like we get him doing a lot of cool stuff, but we don't really get an idea of who he is quite yet, other than his, like, he clearly hates his dad, which is on par for
his dad. His dad is evil in his defense. Yeah.
Well, his
dad seems clear.
I mean, I know it's not Ben Kingsley, but I had a Mandarin vibe off of that guy.
Well, I mean, it is subtitled The Legend of the Ten Rings. So
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if we will see Ben Kingsley again.
I'd be nice. That would be very funny.
In a brief cameo. I would enjoy a brief cameo.
Yeah.
Him locked in the
I was just going to say he's locked in a cage without a toilet. Yeah.
Just a metal chair.
Yeah, just a metal chair. Yeah.
So that kicks off in September. They claim only in theaters. As always, we'll see what happens between now and then. But yeah, great cast in that one. Not Simu Liu, Awkwafina, Tony Leung, Michelle Yeoh. Lots of great characters. And
Michelle Yeoh doesn't even appear in the trailer.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
In the teaser. Yeah, it's like...
Yeah, when you
holding
gotta...
Holding back on us.
Yeah. I mean, when you don't need to show Michelle Yeoh and you've still got a rockin' trailer, yeah. Like you... Come on, that's right. Awesome.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, we should wrap up here since we are running out of time. As always, I'd like to thank my co-host, John Moltz. Thanks for being here.
I want to do a GIF of... I didn't come prepared for this.
For the end of your sentence? You didn't come prepared for the end of the sentence.
Who opened the MacBook Air?
Oh, Craig Federighi.
Craig Federighi.
But with the Sam in the case.
Then, and then Sam opening the case.
Oh.
Nice. Yeah, that's good.
There you go. I mean, that's gonna get you like 8 likes. That's great.
Exactly. Yeah. Take that to the bank.
It's a great intersection.
Yeah. You know what? The banker in episode one is more likely to give you a loan with that GIF rather than the.
Well,
anyway, so that's a dark.
He's a white guy.
It's a dark ending.
Yeah. Guy English, always a pleasure.
You say that every week, and every week I
believe it less.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Honestly, it's been a lot of fun. This has been a really fun show, and you know, good luck stitching this one together.
Thanks, appreciate it. As always, thank you to everybody who's listening out there. We appreciate your support. I know we have had some letters mount up and we haven't had time to address them all, and we will try to get to them in a future episode, but yeah, we've had some time crunches with recording this season, so
yeah.
We'll do what we can, but you can always hit us up at biff@theincomparable.com or at biffcast on Twitter. We appreciate everything you do. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. I was going to go out somehow on my line that I did not get to quote, which is, why didn't you use the metal arm? I don't always think of it. I'm right-handed.
Oh, yeah.
You just look so sheepish about it. Like, I mean, yeah, like, oh, yeah, it's just a metal arm.